want to talk tonight a little bit. I guess this is like the final phase of life cycle events. We'll think about where we're going next in terms of the what series will come next. But I want to talk a little bit about the funeral and the burial. Obviously, there's a lot of different minhagim, and we're not gonna cover everything. But just we'll talk about some of the things that pertain to us, some of the things that pertain to the Avelim, and just to get a perspective of what we're doing. Obviously, there are a lot of different minhagim when it comes to these kind of things, both in terms of the Levaya and in terms of the Kvura. But we'll try to get a sense of the general pieces, and then we can fit in the specific minhagim as people experience them. Okay. So the first step is to recognize that that when it comes to the mitzvah of Levaya, right, which literally means to escort the mace, to escort the deceased, so it's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah midrabanan. The Rambam says in Hilchos Avel, in Perek Yudal, mitzvahs aseh shel divrehem. It's a mitzvah midrabanan. He brings a whole bunch of different things that are mitzvahs aseh midrabanan. And one of them is ulahotzi hames. One of them is what he calls hotzah hames, which is taking out the deceased. Ulhisasek b'chol tzarchei hakvura, to involve yourself in all the matters pertaining to the burial. Loseis al hakosev, to literally to carry the mace. Veleilech lefanav, velispod velachpor velikvor, to eulogize the mace, to actually dig the grave of the mace. All of these things are included in this mitzvah asay midrabanan. Ve'elu hein gemilus chasadim shebegufo she'en lahem shiur. He says this is a gemilus chasadim. Right, we say in the morning, Elu dvarim she'en lahem shiur, and this is one of the things, halvayas hames. So this is one of those things that's gemilus chasadim, it's ein lahem shiur. And writes the Rambam that even though, afal pi, even though this is a mitzvah midrabanan, right, the mitzvah midrabanan of chesed, this is one of the forms of actually doing chesed with your body. Nevertheless, he writes, afal pi shekol mitzvah seil midivreyem, harehin bichlal v'yahavta l'recha kamocha. They're also subsumed under the Doraisa of Yahavta L'Recha Kamocha. So it's not just the Dirabanan here of Chesed, but it's actually subsumed under the larger Mitzvah Midoraisa of Yahavta L'Recha Kamocha, namely, Kol Advarim She'ata Rotza She'yasu Osom L'Cha Acherim, Asay Ata Osom La'Achecha B'Torah Uve Mitzvos. Whatever you want others to do to you, you have to do to others as well. So just like after 120 years, we hope that others take care of us, and they prepare our funeral, and they take care of us, and they bury us in a bakovedik and proper way. So too, that's what we should do. That's what we should want to do for others. That's the mitzvah of Yahavta L'Recha Kamocha in this context of Havayas Hameis. It's interesting if we think about who goes to a Levaya. So nowadays, we generally assume, well, it depends how close I am to the person, if I can go, if I can't go. There's actually interesting halachos about who goes to a levaya, in terms of the halacha really talks about somebody who's learning, somebody who's studying Torah. So when are they allowed to? When do they have to be mevatel Torah and stop their learning in order to attend a levaya, in order to attend a funeral? As well as people who are osek in malacha, people who are working, and when a person has to really take off from work for a levaya as well. So the Shulchan Aruch says in source number two that when it comes to bittul Torah, if a person is studying Torah, so he writes, the rule is mevatlim Torah lahotzas hameis. Right, we are mevatel Talmud Torah for a levaya, for hotzas hameis. Now, when and how? So he says it depends. Leman demasni laachirim ein lo shiur. It's interesting for someone who's a teacher of Torah, someone who teaches Torah to others. He says there's no shiur, meaning no matter how many people are already attending the levaya, you should still go to the levaya. Or if it's someone who's just a teacher of Torah, which is a fascinating thing, afilu yesh od kama alafim misbatal bishvilo. Even if there are thousands of other people there, you should still be mevatel Torah and go to levaya. If it's not a person who taught Torah, but it's a person who studied Torah themselves, the kari v'tani, da'anu shikar v'shana ve'adayin l'shana l'tamidim. He studied himself, but he didn't teach others Torah. So then it depends. What's the shiur? You'd be surprised. Im yesh shishim ribo. If there are 600,000 people there, so then you don't have to go. Right? Then you don't have to go. Ein tzarach lizbat b'shvilo. Then you don't have to stop your Torah learning for that. Right? Where's the 600,000 come from? So some of the mefarshim say it comes from Har Sinai. just like at Har Sinai, we had 600,000 Jewish men at Har Sinai. So too at this when the neshama is going back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's almost like a mini Har Sinai, and therefore also 600,000. If it's a regular person who's not really a big learner, certainly not a teacher, but not even a learner, the man de lo kari v'tani kema sheyesh lo mishayisasekimo in tzarch liizbat lo bishvilo fu sheyesh hamasara. You just have to make sure there are 10 people there. You have to make sure there are 10 people there for the levaya, and after that, then you're okay. Then you don't have to go. It's interesting that Rama points out that nowadays we kind of just assume that we can be mevatel Torah, that we can go because everybody learns, right? Everybody learns, even if maybe not everyone teaches, but everyone certainly learns. And it's interesting. It seems like nowadays the custom is that we don't just say that a person, just because a person is a Rebbe or a person's a teacher, so everybody has to be mevatel Torah to go to a levaya. You don't find yeshivas emptying out just because some Rebbe and some yeshiva, is having their levaya. What we do find, though, is that we find that category nowadays applied to, Gedolei Torah, people who are Gedolim, who are real big Talmid Chachamim. So there, we kind of apply this category, that's the person, that's what we're talking about, someone who's a teacher, meaning he's a teacher of the masses, he's a Gadol HaTorah. That kind of person, the yeshiva is empty out. When you go to Israel, I remember I was in Eretz Yisrael, I happened to be there for a bunch of different levayas. Remember, I was there for Rav Pam's levaya and Rav Gifter's levaya. I was there for Rav Eger Miller's levaya. They were all in the same year. And then I was there for Rav Shach's levaya. And with all these levayas, everybody went. It was in Yerushalayim. These were Gedolei Torah, and the levayas were in Yerushalayim. And thousands and thousands and thousands of people. I'm sure you've seen pictures. You may have even been to levayas of Gedolei Torah. I was at Rav Shach's levaya B'nei Brak. It was Erev Shabbos. So they estimated that maybe there were only 200,000 or 300,000 people there because it was Erev Shabbos. So people couldn't travel as much. But you have thousands and thousands of people. Why? Because a person who's a Gadol HaTorah, a person who contributed so much to the Torah learning of others, so that person deserves that we should stop our Torah learning to pay them the kavod achro, to give them the final respects. So that's the halacha in terms of that. Obviously, when it comes to other people, so then it depends. It depends if how many other people are going. It depends if we can go, if we can take off, and things like that. So then it would depend on those types of things. If you look at the second paragraph there in source number 2, the Shulchan Aruch writes that when the mace is actually being carried out, when he's actually, when the mace is being escorted, ubishas hotza mevatlim mikol shar melacha subayim lelavoso. Right? And then everybody stops what they're doing and comes to escort the mace. Afil ilo kari vitani, even if the person was not a learner, the loma afigina bein lo kari vitani, ela bebitul talmud Torah, va b'shar malachos, when it comes to other, that's talking about talmud Torah. When it comes to being mevatel Torah, so it depends. Was the person a learner? Was the person not a learner? But when it comes to other malachos, right? I'm an accountant, I'm a lawyer, I'm a pharmacist, I'm a car mechanic, whatever I'm doing. So when it comes to those other malachos, so then if you see a mace going by, you have to stop and you have to be malave the mace. And again, you imagine like the imagery here of the small town, and there's a levaya in town. So even if you're maybe not close to the person, but the levaya goes through the main street, so you have your shop, which is off the main street. The levaya is going past, so it's respectful. You come out of your shop and you're malava the person a little bit. Obviously, if you're in Manhattan, you don't know what's going on, and the mace is on the highway. So then we have no idea, what's happening here. We can't experience these, these things. We have no clue what's happening. But that's the idea. Yeah. Okay. Yes. Yeah, so we'll we're gonna get to that in a minute.
The second question.
Yeah. Right.
Is there davening also? You said Talmud Torah, you
right. Tefillah.
More important. Let's say there's a last minion, you can't find another.
Right. Minion. That's a good question. I'm not 100% sure. I would think that you would daven, unless maybe if there aren't 10 people there, then maybe you should go. But I'm not 100% sure. Check into that. Okay. So there is an interesting Gemara. The Gemara Brachos takes this actually very seriously. And the Gemara says in source number 3, Amar Rachva, Amar Rav Yehuda, Kol haroa hameis ve'eino melavehu. A person who sees a mace and is not melave the mace, doesn't participate in the levaya, over mishum loeg la'rosh cheref osehu. It's almost like you're denigrating like you're denigrating this person. You're denigrating the person who passed away. So it's a question exactly what that's referring to, but it seems to be referring to a person who's not really doing anything. If I'm not doing anything, and now I see, I'm not working, I'm not learning, I'm not really doing much, and I see a mace, go by. So then a person is, really obligated to go and to be malava that mace. And if you don't do it, so then you really have, it's like a curse almost, loig la'rosh, here, a mace is going by, you're not giving him respect, you're not paying the final respects to this person. But if you are malava him, it's a tremendous schar. He'll veil mascharo. Amar avasi alava kosov. Amar malva Hashem chonein dalu mechabdu chonein evyon. So it's almost like you're malava Hashem. When you're malava the mace, it's almost like you're malava Hashem. So there is a tremendous schar for a person who is malava the mace.
What does that malava exactly mean?
Literally to escort. Escort.
Not just to stand silently.
Correct. Right. Malava means to escort. There is something about standing. I didn't really want to get into it. There's interesting halachos about, the Sfarim talk about, different posts can talk about standing in honor of those who are participating. That's generally referred to, it's generally assumed to be referring to standing in honor of the ones who are being melave. So meaning the ones who are participating in the levaya, you're standing in their honor because they are participating in such a holy mitzvah. Not so much that you're standing, in honor of the mace. The mace is really the covenant is to be malava, to actually escort the mace, to walk with it. That's really the mitzvah of levaya. In terms of how long you have to walk, how much you have to walk, so the Shulchan Aruch in source number 4 writes, first he quotes this Gemara in Brachos, but then he writes at the end, ulefachos yilavenu dalet amos, that at least you have to escort him dalet amos. At least you have to escort him dalet amos. So dalet amos is about 8 feet. It's not all that long. Now, generally today, what we see, after levayas, is that they'll put the aron into the hearse, and then the hearse, drives usually to like the end of the block or something like that, and then it stops, and everybody walks behind the hearse until the end of the block. So it seems the minhag is that we don't just like trail off. Once it's dalet amos, technically speaking, if you go by the letter of the law in the Shulchan Aruch, once you walk dalet amos, you're done. You did the mitzvah, now you can go, and you can take off. So obviously, if you have to leave, you have to leave. So at least walk dalet amos, that's the minimum. But there seems to be that the minhag is that we walk until the people seem to have the minhag that they walk until the hearse stops. Hopefully, the hearse won't keep driving. But usually, the hearse just goes to the corner, and then but that seems to be the minhag. That's just respectful. You don't have to do the exact minimum. So you walk until the hearse stops, and then you go. Yeah.
As far as escorting the mace, does that apply only to men or also to women?
It applies to both men and women. There is something about women not being malava mace all the way to the base hakvaros. There is a halacha like that. It seems to me that the minhag certainly in our circles is not like that. I think in other circles they might still have that minhag, but in our circles, women do are malava the mace to the base hakvaros. But just in terms of the actual levaya, it doesn't seem to be a difference between men and women. These big levayas where you have thousands and thousands of people, so it would be too crazy. So generally, you don't find the women there in the streets. Mm-hmm. Usually, the women are, in a different location. They might be malav the mace also, but to have all the people there together would just be too much in terms of the value. But it seems to be that the minhag is that they do. One interesting group of people, once we're talking about different groups of people, who are not malava the mace, and this is something fascinating. The Shulchan Aruch writes in source number 5 that when it comes to children, v'tinoko shel beis rabban ein misbachim klal, children should not come out of school for levaya. Now you might say, why would children come out for levaya anyway, right? But it's a mitzvah, it's chinuch. Why not? If it's a gadol b'Torah, certainly. But he says children should not. The Shulchan Aruch paskin, children should not stop learning for a levaya. What's the reason for this? So the Tor writes that the reason is because if you look at source number 6, he writes in the name of Rabbeinu Yom Tov Miyuni. He says, what's the reason towards the end of the line? Sharei ein mevadlin afilu lebinyan beis hamikdash. He says, even when we, Mirza Hashem, for the third beis hamikdash, even when we rebuild the beis hamikdash, children don't stop learning for the building of the beis hamikdash. Right? All the men are going to stop doing what they're doing to pitch in and help build the beis hamikdash. But the children shouldn't stop learning. Now, obviously, this is based on the Maimar Chazal. It appears in a few different places. One of them is in the Sifri de Agadatha on Esther. So in source number 7, quotes Reb Chelbo, Ein ha'olam miskayim, ela behevel piyam shel tinoko shel beis rabba. Right, a statement that I'm sure many of us have heard before, that literally the world stands on the breath of the children learning. The world stands on the breath of the children learning. So we believe that children learning is a very holy thing. It's a very holy thing. It's even more holy than adults learning. Right? Children learning Torah is a beautiful thing, is a holy thing, and therefore the world stands on the children learning Torah, and therefore for Hotzas Hameis, even if it's an Adam Gadol, it sounds like, even if it's an important person, you know, you shouldn't be Mevatel Torah. Now there are cases where, you know, Gedolei Torah, where they do bring the kids out of yeshiva. But in general, it's not so simple. It's not so simple. So when my son wants to take off from yeshiva, you know, I tell him it's not so simple. You know, there's this Sifri de Agadatha and Esther. You know, the whole world is resting on the study of your Torah. He doesn't always seem so convinced by that, but it's a serious thing. You know, to take kids out of yeshiva. You know, this is perhaps the source for the Zilberman's school in Yerushalayim, where they have school 365 days a year. I think it's 364. Actually, I mean, they're probably working with the Jewish calendar, so 353, because they don't learn when? On Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av, Yisro Talmud Torah. Yom Kippur, they do learn. Right? Yom Kippur, they have class. But Tisha B'Av, they don't have, because it's an Yisro of Talmud Torah. But every other day of the year, they have yeshiva. Shabbos, Yom Tov, they have yeshiva. Sure, why not? So that's a very intense model, of course, but it works for them. But it's based on this idea that the world stands on the Hevel Piyam Shel Tinoko Shel Beis Rabban. If you've ever seen, you walk into a classroom and you see kids, you know, little kids, you know, high school kids learning is cute, but it's not the same thing. You walk and you see little kids learning, it's like Olam Haba. It's like you feel like you're in Gan Eden. You see like these little kids learning Torah, but that's what that's what the Sifri says. Okay. So now we come to the Levaya. Let's say we've decided, you know, we came to the Levaya, we stopped our learning, we stopped our malacha, whatever we did, we came to the Levaya. So generally the first thing that's done at a Levaya is Kriya. That's generally the first thing that's done at the Levaya. what we do is we make the bracha of Dayan HaEmes, and we do Kriya. Those are usually the first two steps at a Levaya. Now it's interesting because those two steps are really not connected. The bracha of Dayan HaEmes, some people mistakenly think that it's the bracha on Kriya. It's not a bracha on Kriya. Dayan HaEmes has nothing to do with Kriya. Dayan HaEmes is just a bracha that we make when this happens, you know, when a tragedy strikes. So we make a bracha that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the ultimate judge, is the true judge, the just judge, and we accept his judgment even though we may not understand it. That's the bracha of Dayan HaEmes. We make it, the custom has become to make it right before we do Kriya, but it's important to recognize that that's really just the custom in terms of the proximity. But really, the two have nothing to do with each other. Kriya doesn't have a bracha on it. A little question maybe why, but Kriya does not have a bracha to it. But there is an obligation to do Kriya. If you look at source number 8, Mishameis lameisu hume ameisim sheroi lihisavel aleihem, right? Someone who loses a loved one, one of the krovim, chayev v'krolav. You have to do Kriya for this person who passed away. There are many different halachos when it comes to Kriya, many different halachos in terms of how the Kriya is done, where it's done, whether it's done in front of everyone or in a side room, and the right side, the left side. So there are many different halachos. There are many halachos that are differences between, depending on if the person lost a parent or the person lost a child, a sibling or spouse, as the halachos are different. Two important things to keep in mind in general for those, I mean, the Mirtz Hashem, you know, this shouldn't apply to us for many years to come, but if we ever witness, you know, very often we find ourselves at a levaya and sometimes we're asked to help out, or it's, you know, somebody we know or a loved one or a friend or relative we're helping out with a levaya. So it's important, two things that are important for Kriya to recognize. The minimum shear for Kriya, there is a minimum amount for Kriya, and that amount is a tefach. So a tefach is approximately a fist, or an average size fist. Maybe 5 inches or so. So sometimes you see, you know, sometimes I see, I pay a shiva call and I see people and they're wearing their torn clothing and it's just torn a little bit. So really, to be yotzei the mitzvah of Kriya, you have to tear a tefach. Now for parents, we tear even more sometimes, but at least it should be a tefach, the actual tear. That's one halacha that's important to keep in mind. The other halacha that's important to keep in mind is that the avel really should be doing the tearing. So sometimes, you know, you have a person you're helping out and you're helping them out a little too much. So, you know, you can get it started, and sometimes, like, you know, the Rav will get it started with a knife, or somebody else who's helping out will get it started with a knife, that's fine. But then the other person should really take their hand, and they should be the ones who are really doing the Kriya. So that those are two important things to keep in mind. But we do the Kriya at the beginning of the Levaya. By the way, it's interesting, because if you look in Shulchan Aruch, there's no mention of that timing for the Bracha and the Kriya. In fact, if anything, it seems that the Bracha of Dayan HaEmes and the Kriya should be made right after the person passes. Right, if you're in the hospital and Yitzias Neshama, the person passes away, it seems like right then and there you should tear Kriya, you should make the Bracha right then and there. So that's what it would seem. The custom has evolved over time that generally in our community, we do the Kriya right before the Levaya. Some people do the Kriya before the mace is escorted out of the house or out of the hospital, wherever the mace is, you know, on the way to the Levaya. But we generally do it at the beginning of the Levaya. Sfarim, interestingly enough, don't do it till after the Kvura. Right? They wait, and they do the Kriya after the Kvura. So the timing of the Kriya is not so clear, but the minhag does seem to be in our circles that we do it at the beginning of the actual funeral, at the beginning of the actual Levaya. Yeah?
What's the source of Kriya?
The source of Kriya... That's a good question. The source of Kriya... Does it say that they did Kriya there? I don't remember offhand.
Well, when you wait, it'll be like it's sort of in rags or whatever. That's
right, there are different reasons for it. There are different reasons given, but there is a source for it. Some of the halachas are learned from Yechezkel. There's a psukim in Yechezkel that talk about avelus. So I can't remember offhand. I'll double check. I can't remember offhand if it's from the psukim in Yechezkel. I'm not sure if it's by Aaron. I don't remember the source offhand. I'll get back to you, Herb. Okay. So the actual procedure of the Levaya is relatively straightforward. It's mostly minhagim. We say some kapitel chatehillim before, and then obviously there are hespedim. There's not so much in terms of halacha when it comes to the actual Levaya, funeral ceremony. We conclude with the Kelmala. These are just the minhagim that we have. You know, there is a mitzvah to be maspid, to give a hesped for the mace. But there's no requirement of who should do it or how many number of hespedim and things like that. That all just depends on the family and who wants to speak and how much they have to say. I've been to Levayas where, the hespedim are very brief and, you're done in 20 minutes. I've been to Levayas where it's like an hour and a half and the hespedim are still going on. So it depends, who the person was and how much the family wants to speak about them. So that really all depends. After the Levaya, we of course do the actual Levaya HaMeis, right? We actually escort the mace generally out of the building. And like I said, the mace, the Aron is put into the hearse, and then we escort the mace following the Aron. After that, there is a custom to wash our hands. And the Shulchan Aruch actually brings this in source number 9, and he writes, Minogu lahakpid, they were so strong about this minhag, Vinogu lahakpid mikanes adam labayis achar kodem sheyirchatz v'yeshev gimel pa'amim. So we don't really have this minhag of sitting 3 times, but he says that we have the minhag not to enter a house before we wash our hands. Right? Not to enter a house before we wash our hands. And he writes, minhag avosenu Torah. He says this is this is a real minhag, and it's a minhag of our fathers, and we have to treat it seriously. Now it's interesting, there is a little bit of a kula here from the Chachmas Adam, and he writes that when the Shulchan Aruch talks about not entering into a house following without washing your hands, so he writes, and this is going on to the page 2, he writes that if you look in the Torah implies the Dafka Kishachos min Beis HaKvaros Osin Ke. He says that's really after you return from the cemetery. So there we take the hand washing much more seriously, and there we say you shouldn't even walk into a house because you have the tumah on you. You shouldn't really walk into the house or the ruach ra. Perhaps you shouldn't walk into the house until you wash. Aval kishemal v'vechozer, aval kishemalav v'vechozer mikol shekain kishelo haya besoch arba amos shel meis eino tzarich. But he says if you just escorted the mace, but you didn't actually go to the Beis HaKvaros, you didn't go to the cemetery, or he says, let's say you didn't even get close to the mace, you didn't get within the four amos of the mace. He says, technically speaking, we don't have to be so strict about it. Now, the custom still is that even if you just attend a levaya, you do wash your hands. But there is, again, some room to be lenient. So if you got home and you didn't prepare water, or you forgot to wash after at the funeral home, and now you're home and no one else is inside and they can't bring water out for you, you know, so then there is some room to be made. If you just went to the ceremony, to the funeral, and not to the burial, there is room to be made to go into the house. You should still wash, but there's room to be lenient to go into the house. There is a minhag also that we don't dry our hands after we wash. The Chachma Sadam also says in source number 11, many of us are familiar with this, that v'chein b'chshas hanatila ein likach hakli miyad misherachatz. Right, we don't transfer the washing cup from hand to hand. You wash and then you put the washing cup down. That's why they usually have them on a chain or something. Right, you just put it down, you let it drop, and then the next person picks up the chain. Now, this is not something that we want to really be doing. It shows a little bit of a reluctance. You know, it's not like, you know, you're not eager to hand it off to someone else. So we're kind of doing this reluctantly. But it's also interesting that the Shulchan Aruch talks about not going into the bayis. So many people say, poskim say that this is specifically referring to a bayis. So, for example, if you come to a yeshiva afterwards, and you go to a shul afterwards, you wouldn't have the same hakpada. So theoretically, I remember when I was in Ner Yisrael, there's a funeral home right up the block from the yeshiva. And there are many frum people have their funerals there. So on occasion, you know, the boys in the yeshiva would attend the funeral, and then we would come back to the yeshiva. So I remember the poskim said that we can go into the yeshiva building and wash at the sinks, you know, in the yeshiva. Why? Because it's not a bias. It's not a house. Here we're specifically talking about not going into the house, but a yeshiva or a shul, which is not a house, so there's more room to be lenient as well. We have the minhag that once we get to the actual burial, right? Once we arrive at the burial, so the first thing we do is what some call ma'amados, right? Which means we walk and we stop. We stop seven times. It's actually interesting that in the Ramah, if you look in source number 12, he doesn't write anything about seven times. He writes Yesh Omrim Kishemagini Mameis Tekvaros. Some say that once you get to the burial, Ma'amidim also, that's a language of Ma'amidim, right? Ma'amados, Kol Dalar Amos, Kodem Shenikvar, that you walk four Amos and you stop every four Amos. He doesn't give a number of times that you stop, though. He just says that you stop every four Amos as you're walking. And he writes, that's our custom. L'cheinogu ha'idna, l'ha'amido, listen to what he says. Beis Gimel Pa'amim. He says, our minhag is the Ramah, that we do it two, three times. We do these Ma'amados, we walk and we stop, we do it two, three times. Kodim Shomer Malav Tzidu Kadim, before we get to that. And he points out that on days, Ubiyamim She'en Omrim Tzidu Kadim, on days, there are certain days where we do not recite Tzidu Kadim, days, you know, generally the days that we don't recite Tachnun, so we also don't recite Tzidu Kadim, which we'll talk about in a little bit. Ein Tzarech Lahamido, so we also don't do the Ma'amado. So on days like that, we don't do our practices, we don't do the Ma'amado. Now, our minhag is that we do seven of them. We generally do seven of them, and we recite Yoshe B'Sei Serelion, as we're doing it, and then we stop at one word, the final pasuk, you know, with seven words. So we stop at one of those words during each of the seven ma'amados. And sometimes, you know, it's hard to finagle exactly four amos. You know, you try your best, but the minhag is that we do the seven ma'amados. There are different minhagim as to whether this is done for women or not. Some people have the minhag to do it for women. Many people have the minhag that it's not done for women. This is only done for men. Part of the reason I think of the seven ma'amados is because of we imagine like the seven rakiyas, like we believe there are seven levels, so to speak, between this world and Shamayim, or you know, the Olam HaEmes. So it's almost like we're escorting the mace, you know, through each one of these seven realms until he gets to his final resting place, and then he'll be in the Olam HaEmes.
I never understood when you say
Yoshe B'Seser,
where they stop. Even when I look in the Siddur, you said there's seven words?
Yeah, in the final pasuk. Yeah, no, it's just, if you look in the final pasuk. it's in Shachris. If you look in Shachris of Shabbos, we say Yoshe B'Seser. By Ki Malach of Yitzavilach, Lishmarcha B'chol Durachecha. That pasuk has seven words. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So we stop at those seven words. The first time you stop at Ki, the second time you stop at Malachov, etc., etc. It's not the last pasuk. It's in the middle. It's right here in Yoshe B'Seser. Yeah.
But you stop at each one of those words.
Yeah.
You say Yoshe B'Seser
until that pasuk Ki.
And
Right. Stop and then go back.
Then you go back.
Go back to the beginning and then you stop at Malachov.
Oh, you keep going back.
Okay. So that's the that is the minhag. Now the actual kvura itself is a mitzvah. The actual kvura itself is a mitzvah. Some people want to say it's a mitzvah midaraisa. If you look at source number 13, the pasuk says lo salin nivla soal ha'etz. Here the pasuk is talking about someone who Rachman al-Litzlan was killed by Beis Din. So the halacha is that you can't leave them. You can't leave the body, even though even once they were executed, you can't leave the body overnight. You have to bury the body immediately. Ki kavor tikverenu bayom hahu. Right, and ki kavor tikverenu. You have to bury that body. You have to bury it immediately. And the Rambam says in source number 14 that that kavura is a mitzvah to the point that what, let's say a person on his deathbed says, you know, I don't want to be buried. I don't want to be buried. Right? You know, throw me into the ocean or something like that. You know, or just leave me, let me rot. You know, a person says, Rachman al-Iklad, I didn't tziva shelo yikaver, ain shomen lo. The Rambam says, you don't listen to the guy. Right? You disregard what he said. Why? Shakvura mitzvah, shenem marki kavar tik barenu. It's a mitzvah in the Torah, kavar tik barenu. You have to bury the person. You don't care if what he says. If he says, don't do this, it's a mitzvah in the Torah. You have to do it. So we take it seriously. We take the kvura very seriously. And it is a mitzvah. It is a mitzvah in the Torah. Because of that, so we're very careful to be involved in that mitzvah as much as possible. It's a tremendous mitzvah. We try to be involved in that as much as possible. I just want to mention. I didn't mention this earlier, but the pasuk, you know, the pasuk begins with lo salin. There's a prohibition that you're not allowed to delay burying this person. So this is something that's comes up, you know, all the time in terms of scheduling levayas. But it's a major consideration, and basically what the Torah is telling us is that you can't delay. You really can't delay. Out of kavod for the mace, you really cannot delay. The only time we allow a delay in the kvura is for the kavod of the mace. So, for example, let's say there's a situation where if you rush the levaya, you know, there aren't going to be really any people there, and if you make it the next day, you know, there'll be a nice turnout. You know, more people will be there. It'll be more of a kavod for the mace. So then in that scenario, you know, it might be okay to delay. If the immediate family members are not present, the avelim are not present, so there might also be a reason to delay. But it's very tricky. It's not, you know, it's the pasuk in the Torah, lo salin. It's not, you know, it's a mitzvah that we're not supposed to delay, and certainly al pi Kabbalah, people take it very, very seriously. You know, not to delay under any circumstances, and sometimes you have situations where you have a cousin or a brother-in-law or things like that who are not going to make it in time, and you know they want to push the levaya to the next day so that they could be there. It's not really the right thing to do. You know, if it's the immediate family and it's the Avelim and, you know, they're going to be there the next day, that's one thing. You know, that might be a cheshman for the actual Avelim. But just because a brother-in-law is not going to be there or, you know, an aunt or something like that, as much as we want the family there, you know, you really have to bury it right away. So, you know, I was involved in one situation. It was like, you know, it was down to the wire. Like, they were trying to figure out when they were going to do it. It's, you know, and sometimes you have these calculations. But really, you know, the mitzvah is to do it as soon as possible. So even if you could do it that day, if you could make the arrangements, You know, it depends what time the person was nifter, but if the person's nifter in the morning, I remember we had a case here in the shul, right? A person was nifter, you know, early in the morning, and we scheduled a live for that day. That's the way it should be. And somebody wasn't there. Not one of the Avelim, one of the family members, but it's not, you know, you don't wait. It's the cover of the mace is to be buried as soon as possible. So that's just as an aside. Okay. So, very interesting. It's an interesting minhag. I saw this minhag actually, only a couple of years ago for the first time. But the Shulchan Aruch writes that in order to really fulfill the mitzvah of kvura, you have to obviously bury the person in the ground, right? So nowadays they have all these things where they preserve, you know, they preserve the body and they stick them in a shelf somewhere, you know, in a mausoleum or things like that. So that's obviously not the Jewish way. That's not what we do. That's not considered kvura. You know, I mean, you may have shelved the person. You know, you might be storing them, you know, but it's not considered kavura. It's not considered actual burial. And the Shulchan Aruch writes in 15, "Hano sein meso be'aron velo kavur bakarka." You put them in an aron, and then you don't bury the aron. You just leave them there. Over mishum malin es hames, right? That's that you violate the law of lo solin. You're delaying the funeral. You got to bury the person. Fimnasna ba'aron v'kavra b'karka ena overlov. Once you bury that aron, so you don't violate this anymore. Umikom makom writes the Shulchan Aruch, fascinating halacha. Umikom makom yafe l'kavra b'karka mamish afilu b'chutz laaretz. The best thing to do is to bury the mace in the actual karka without an aron. Says the Shulchan Aruch, that's the ideal, even in chutz laaretz. Now we know that in Eretz Yisrael that's the minhag. In Eretz Yisrael they bury without an aron, right? And that's what the Shulchan Aruch says, that's the best way to bury a person. We'll see why in a minute. In chutz laaretz, it's illegal, right? You can't bury someone, you can't bury a human being, without an aron in America. I don't know about other countries. So certainly in America, you can't do it. It's illegal. So we have to bury it in aron, but it's not the ideal way to do it. It's not the ideal way to bury. The Bir Hagra writes that he quotes a Yerushalmi in source number 16 that in the Tzava of Rebbe, right, Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, when he was Nifter, before he was Nifter, he wrote a will, and he wrote in the will, Tehei Aroni Nekuva. He says, you're going to put me in an aron, that's fine, but I want the aron to have holes. Why? Because I want to be connected to the earth. And he writes, Upirish HaRamban, the Ramban explains that it wasn't just that the aron had holes, but sheyitluhu kaf hatachton sheba aron v'yashkihu al aretz. He says, actually, they had a removable bottom, writes the Ramban. Right? That's what Rebbe wanted. Rebbe wanted a removable bottom. So as soon as you put it in, you remove the bottom, and then the body is resting directly on the earth. Yes, exactly. Okay? Shekavuros karka, writes the Gra, Shekavuros karka mitzvah, burying on the actual earth is a mitzvah. Velo tema mishum chavigusa de Eretz Yisrael. He says nothing to do with Eretz Yisrael. This is not Zionistic. Right? It has nothing to do with the love of the land of Israel. That's a beautiful thing. Right? It's beautiful to love the land of Israel, but this has nothing to do with that. Ela afilu b'chutzlaretz. Why mishum shenemar ve'el afar tashuv? Right? We have the pasuk says ve'el afar tashuv, that the person is going to return to the earth. That's where we're supposed to be buried. That's where we're supposed to bury a human being. So we now have the minhag to bury in an aron, but technically speaking, the best thing to do is to bury even without an aron. The Shach writes that he says he was he quotes the Aterazov and the Prisha, who are bewildered that nowadays, he says, in their time that they used to bury the Kohanim in a full aron with a base, with a bottom, right? Which nowadays that's what we all do. We all bury it in an aron with a bottom. In those days, they buried the Kohanim in an aron with a bottom. And he says, I don't understand why they do this. Tahinu she'osim milamata, daf v'shochev ala daf, ve'omrim tam mishum chashivus Kohanim. They say that it's because of the chashivus of the Kohanim. That's why they put this, that's why they have it. He says, it's terrible. Dehare adarab, tov hu lishkav ala afar. He says, the best thing to do is just to be directly on the earth. And he writes, so he does bring a couple of yeshuvim, a couple of reasons why perhaps nowadays we're not so careful about this. He writes, "Well, if mashikos abedrisha de bizmanenu shenosnim charosis al pi ve'enov." What do we do nowadays? We have the minhag that we put pieces of earthenware, right, on the eyes of the mace and on the mouth of the mace. Harei b'makom afar de bizmanom nicha. So he says maybe that's in place of the afar at that time, because the earthenware, it comes from the earth, it comes from clay, it's dirt. So therefore, that's like the ve'el afar tashuv. So even though the body is not resting directly on the earth, but at least here you have some earth connected to the person as they, when they're buried, that's good enough. And finally, he writes that another reason is the ef shel aron she'osim achshav shelo yunikuvim b'tzdadim u'benekev sagi. He says also, our aronos, they all have cracks. They all have cracks and little holes and things like that. So therefore, that also suffices. If you just have a hole and a crack, and that's going to, so to speak, connecting the mace with the earth, that's also good enough. I don't know. Today's aronas, I think, are pretty good, pretty solid. But they do have cracks, obviously, where the pieces of wood are joined, and perhaps that's what we are relying on. But as some mentioned here, they do have these aronos nowadays. The Hasidim are makbid to do this. They bury with this removable bottom. I remember I was at a Levaya once, and I had never seen it before. And all of a sudden, I see the guy, right, after they put they lower the mace down, all of a sudden the guy jumps in. It's like, where's he going? He jumps in, and he's, shuffling things around, and all of a sudden he comes up with two boards, and what happened? It's a removable bottom, and then once the mace is down there, they take out the bottom, they take out these two planks, and the body rests directly on the earth. So, So I'm not sure if it's legal in America. I'm not sure if it's legal to do that.
Now that I have that legal strength, and the boards come up, but they stay inside the arrow.
Ah, okay. So that's even better. So nobody even sees. I don't know. Do you know what the law is in terms of? I don't know what the.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But I mean, most of the arrows have. The plane.
They all have some holes on the bottom too. Right.
What happens if you don't have a body for all these rules?
So what do you have?
If someone passes away, you don't have the body.
You don't have the body? Where's the body?
Let's say someone died in a plane crash or...
You're saying you don't have anything?
Right.
You don't have any remains?
Right.
There's nothing to bury. So,
you don't do any...
I mean, you could have some sort of ceremony, you know, but there's no kavura, obviously. There's nothing to bury. There is some talk about ashes or remains. Like if a person, Rahman al-Itzlan, these are terrible things to think about. But a person, you know, is killed in a terrorist attack in a bomb or something, and they're in a million pieces, you know. So Zaka, you know, with the Avodas HaKodesh that Zaka does in Eretz Yisrael, you know, they collect all of the, you know, every speck of blood that they can get, they collect and they bury it. So there are different minhagim when it comes to those kind of things, burying ashes or burying body parts and things like that. But if you don't have anything, there's nothing to bury. So, you know, you can have a ceremony. You can have, like, the actual levaya part, the funeral part. But obviously, when it comes to the burial, there's nothing to do.
Would they do 9/11?
I'm sorry?
Would they do 9/11?
Yeah. I imagine that, you know, they didn't have it. Okay. Just to conclude, there is a minhag. We'll do out of order. Just we'll do 19 first. But there is a minhag that when we bury the person, that we don't hand the shovel from one to the other. It's brought in the Chachmas Adam, and he actually connects it to the not handing of the washing cup. He connects that to the not handing of the shovel. In both cases, you know, he writes, we don't hand things, you know, from one person to the other. So when we shovel, we don't hand the shovel from one person to the other. We have the minhag also that we shovel backwards first. You know, some people shovel three shovels full backwards. Some people like to shovel backwards until the whole aron is covered. But those are different minhagim. And then finally, this is interesting halacha. But the Gemara in Beya tells us that if a mace dies on Yom Tov, yis asku bo amamim. If mace dies on Yom Tov, so you can bury the mace with goyim. You ask the goyim, you know, you hire goyim to bury the mace, and they can bury the mace on Yom Tov. We don't do this nowadays. Nowadays we don't bury on Yom Tov, but technically the Gemara says you can. Mace be Yom Tov sheni, yis asku bo Yisrael. The mace dies on Yom Tov Sheni, then even Jews are allowed to bury the mace on Yom Tov Sheni. Because again, Yom Tov Sheni in Chutz La'aretz is only a minhag, so we keep it. Of course, it's a minhag. Minhag avosin biyodina, but we allow, for kvuras ha'mace, we allow it. There are some communities, the Hasidim, and I think maybe even Breuers, I think they do levayas on Yom Tov Sheni, I think, right? They do levayas on Yom Tov Sheni. But the general minhag is that we don't do any levayas on Yom Tov or Yom Tov Sheni. But what's interesting that the post can point out from this Gemara is that you see here also that whenever it's possible for Jews to do the actual kavura, Jews should be doing it. Even if it's Yom Tov, right? We're talking about Yom Tov Sheni here. You know, you're going to shul, you're in your suit and tie, you're carrying a luv and esrog. You know, it's Yom Tov. Nevertheless, if it's kavura sameis, it's a mitzvah, kavortik berenu, so it's a mitzvah for the Jews to be doing the kavura. And that's why we know, in our levayas, we try to do whatever we can to make sure that we are the ones to bury the mace. Obviously, if it's impossible, like on Yom Tov Rishon, so then the goyim can do it. Right? I was in a situation actually, somebody in this shul, and it was pouring rain. So you know, we tried to do it, but it was the mud was so heavy, you know, literally just physically we couldn't do it. So we had to ask the goyim to help, and they brought the truck, and they did it in 3 seconds. You know, they filled it in. But it's you know, as much as we can, as much as it's physically possible for us to do it, we should try to do it. If it's impossible, so then we can ask the goyim to help us. I just want to conclude the last minute with one fascinating story. I know of a rabbi in Baltimore who Nebuch, his brother went missing, and they couldn't find him. You know, the brother went missing, they couldn't find him. And I think it was his brother or father, I can't remember now which one it was. It was one of his relatives who went missing, they couldn't find him. So they didn't know what to do, you know, and you know, just they couldn't find him. So they went to short time later. They were at a they went to the cemetery to visit some kavaros and say tehillim, and they see off in the distance, you know, they see that there's like a funeral going on, but it's like a very sparse crowd, like it's only a few people standing there. They look like they're not really from. So he walks over and he says, you know, the guy calls him over for a minyan. So he goes over to help him with a minyan. And then the people turn around, you know, the Avelim, the mourners, turn around and they walk away. So this rabbi turns to them and he says, you know, don't you want to help with the actual burial? So the guy looks at him like he's crazy. What are you talking about? Like, that's why we're paying the grave diggers. You know, we don't need to do this. So he said, it's a big mitzvah, it's a big merit to actually bury the person. And he says, look, please. He says, I'm paying these people good money. I'll let them do it. Have a nice day. So and the mourner, turns around. This guy's not firm. He turns around. He walks off. So this rabbi, he was by himself. He tells the gravediggers, he says, I'll do it. And he said, he spent like the next hour just himself, literally just filling in the grave by himself. Because, it was a person who was a Jewish person. He wanted to do it. A week later, they found his father's body. And he was zochet to kavuras Yisrael. So, you never know what's chus, you have actually doing the burial, doing the final chesed. You never know what kind of chus that's going to have and impact your family. Okay, Hadron Halach, the series on life cycle events, and Amir Tashem, we'll see where we go. I might send out online a survey to see what people have in mind for the next topic.